Hey everyone, and welcome to the Risky Biz Soapbox, the podcast where vendors pay us so that they can come onto the show and tell you all about their stuff. This is basically the podcast series where we nerd out on things people have built. It's marketing for them, and on the listener side, it's really just designed to let you know what the participating company actually does in as simple a way as possible, instead of rah, machine learning, rah, cyber. This month's soapbox is oh so controversial. It is brought to you by a firm known as Route 9B. Now, some of you would know the company through really negative reporting by a friend of the show, Brian Krebs, who's written about them twice. One piece said the company's 2015 report into APT 28 mistook the activity of African fishing gangs for fancy bear activity. And Brian wrote about them again last year when he wrote that the company had ceased to exist. So when I got an email from Route 9B asking if they could do one of these soapbox podcasts last year, honestly, I was a little bit reluctant, but after spending some time on the phone with one of their people, I decided that, hey, it is even called the soapbox, and stopping them from participating based on a couple of reports that they dispute probably isn't fair. And here's the thing, the 2015 report into APT 28 actually checked out. They dropped a couple of malware hashes and some IP and domain IOCs that later panned out. But at the time, Krebs on Security quoted a bunch of people saying that the Route 9B analysis was dead wrong. But as I say, it just wasn't. Now, I don't think it helped that the marketing department obviously wrote that report. And I can say Route 9B may have been guilty of a little bit of over-enthusiastic marketing in the past. As I say, I looked into this and it does turn out that, like, you know, I think it was the German parliament was owned by a recompiled version of the same sample Route 9B had found, you know, using the same C2. So I think we can say that that one panned out. They had found a malicious APT 28 DLL and they correctly identified the associated C2 infrastructure. So I do feel Krebs' story probably wasn't fair. No offense to Brian, of course. He's a good friend of the show. Nobody's perfect, myself included, and we're only as good as what our sources tell us. As for them being out of business, they're clearly not. They were part of some weird reversed listing on the NASDAQ back in the day. That went sideways, but the company remains. Now, as a private company, they have around 100 staff, and they've just released a new version of their product at RSA just the other week. So, it being the Soapbox podcast, we're going to talk to them about what it is that they're actually doing. And I guess the way you describe Route 9B is as a threat hunt product maker and managed threat hunt provider. And their approach is a little bit different. They are agentless. They basically authenticate to a machine, inject various payloads into memory, and use that to pull back all sorts of telemetry from machines. They say this means it's much less likely that attackers will see them and see their product. And they do offer this as a product called Orion, or they offer it as a service. And they say their managed services customers come to them because they're pretty unhappy with their MDR and MSSP providers and want better signaling. And I'm sure a bunch of you out there could relate to that statement. Now, as I say, I do think the approach here is interesting. I guess their stuff gives you what software like Google's GR, you know, Google Rapid Response, it gives you a similar sort of insight, but they're pushing it out as memory injectable code for stealth and, you know, doing some different stuff on the back end. Anyway, you'll hear all about that in a minute. So I was joined by John Harbaugh, the COO of Route 9B, and Mike Morris, the CTO. Both of these guys were US Air Force cyber types before they jumped out to the private sector. And the company actually started off doing training. They were doing a lot of training before developing their Orion platform. So I asked Mike if that was an accurate summary of the trajectory of the company, and here's what he had to say.
Yeah, that's about right. And I can put a little texture around it. So when I gave you a little bit of my background, I had heavy training experience when I was doing operations on behalf of the Air Force. I wrote the initial CFETP for the cyber operators, which is CFETP is their career field, basically training manual. That led into during that time in the Air Force, it led into the schoolhouse build out and everything else. And so I had built a pretty good reputation for myself as well as John and others in our organization inside the Air Force and inside the Department of Defense. And so the logical move initially for organizations like that was to come back to us and ask us to build out the mission qualification training components. And so we did that. And what we found is we were providing a significant amount of subject matter expertise on threat hunting, because we really approached the problem differently, right? And the way we define threat hunting, which I'm sure we'll talk about, is different than what the rest of the community is saying. And so as we would go through those training courses, naturally the students would say, ask us what products were we using and what was our methodology. And so I essentially was moonlighting with a portion of the rest of, you know, other developers inside our company. And we had built out the first version of our Threat Hunt platform. And then we've since released version 2.0 of that at RSA. But at, we our roots were always building the product. So we were always a product and a service company, really focused on the solution, whether it be Route 9B's products or products that were already deployed.
I just got to ask too, like this product that you were developing, was it initially just developed for in-house use? Because that's how a lot of this stuff tends to bubble up.
Yeah, so I would say that ours was always intended for product sale to organizations, right? So we were thinking about the Department of Defense and your larger financial institutions and energy firms who have sophisticated security teams and environments. But the initial product was very much built by an engineer for an engineer, is what I'd say. So when we got in front of the tech teams all loved it. But when we got in front of the CFO or the folks controlling the funding, you know, it looked too hard and too challenging. And so what I'd say is that it was for both public consumption as well as internal use.
So I guess there's an interesting aspect to your platform, which does make it different from a lot of the better known sort of forensic and threat hunt tools. I mean, you've got stuff on the network side for threat hunting, boxes that capture network metadata, look for beaconing, all that sort of stuff. That's one approach. You've also got tooling that allows you to strip down a suspect machine. But your approach is a little bit different in that you're kind of doing what a lot of the vulnerability scanning companies do when it comes to like agentless. So you've got a binary that you're essentially pushing out to entire fleets of desktop to pull back telemetry. Have I got that right?
So I think at a high level where you're kind of going to paint it, that would be a good way to kind of set it. But what I'd say is that the platform was designed to allow for interactive operations. So to allow for a cyber defender to be able to reach out and touch any asset that they have inside their environment. Now, it's very much where you're talking about the vulnerability component. I'd say it's think of a pen tester when they're reaching out and trying to look for a vulnerability. You have that actual human operator conducting the activity. In our case, though, what we're doing is we're essentially using those kind of offensive mindsets to provide defense. And so as part of the agentless deployment, what we do is we identify machines inside that environment, or really it could be any type of asset that has, you know, network connectivity. We reach out and then essentially we do direct memory injection on those devices to go and collect data. And then from there, we're looking for the suspicious activity. So was something new introduced into that environment? Has code been inserted inside of memory? Is there a persistent implant that's doing some form of direct injection? Those types of things are all identified. And so really it's a just-in-time execution platform that can be modified and tailored to any operating environment that we step into.
It's funny. I remember having a conversation with one of your other staff members, Eric Stride, about like about how you guys are essentially, you know, getting onto these boxes and putting stuff in memory. And I'm saying, wow, do you have to whitelist that with all of the, you know, EDR and AV solutions? And he just said, oh, they never catch it.
And he's absolutely correct. I mean,
isn't that a little depressing though, that you've created this powerful agent that you're able to just push out there, and none of the host-based controls think that it's suspicious?
The reason we're doing it that way is so that the adversary also doesn't know that it's happening. But to be honest with you, we're using techniques that, yes, those host-based systems aren't catching us. However, again, the client knows we're doing it. In the case of the adversary is doing the same thing and the host-based solutions aren't catching them.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't believe that the host-based automation solution is the answer, right? It's part of an answer, but it's not the answer because, I mean, you know, you're at RSA. If you go to RSA, there's 470 plus of those types of platforms on the floor. And, you know, Mike and I walked around on the floor during the conference and we're like, man, you know, what's really sad is the adversary defeats all of these solutions given enough time, motivation, and, you know, goals, right? So that is a larger piece is sad. And that's why we've taken the approach to saying, okay, how do we equip a defender to leverage all that technology to develop data, telemetry, use it as a sensor, trigger events, and then give that operator, that analyst, the opportunity to engage one-to-one or one-to-many in the enterprise, and then actually highlight or illuminate the adversary's presence all at once instead of playing whack-a-mole, as Mike calls it.
So how is this actually used, right? Because we've got, so far we've set it up that you've got an agent, you know, that essentially, well, it's not an agent. You've got some code that you're injecting into memory, all about the network, that can do things like pull back telemetry and sort of look for hunting. You've mentioned that it's using, you know, offensive techniques for defensive operations. But what does that look like? I mean, is this a point in time exercise where you might be suspicious that there's been an event and then you deploy this code, you know, you give it domain admin and it goes out and infects, I guess is a way to say it, all of your own desktops and starts, you know, stealthily gathering information? Or is this something that you're doing every day? Like, how do you actually use this?
Yeah, so it really depends, right? And the reason I say that, I never like giving that answer, but the reason I say that is because the business context of every client that we go into is different. Right. And so what we do is we first take a look at the client, try to understand the business context, understand, and you can't see me now, but air quotes, their critical infrastructure. And we start hunting there. Right. Because at the end of the day, the attacker has a motive. They're not just exploiting an environment just to exploit it. And so what we'll do is we'll start hunting in that critical infrastructure, and then we're slowly peeling back the layers of the onion. And so to me, there's really two components of hunt. There's the proactive component, which is looking for the unknown unknowns inside of that environment, right? And so that could be scanning an entire VLAN, or it could be down to specific host, right? And so you have that proactive component, looking through, trying to find the adversary that's breaking through the window, essentially. And then you have a second component, which is really kind of remote tactical incident response. And so what I'm talking about there is if you have an EDR platform that did trigger on some type of signature or some type of anomaly, then we can use our platform to go and actively engage in essentially real time. And so for us, we never tell our clients that they are not going to be breached, because the reality is a motivated adversary will always win and will always end up getting in. So what we do is we focus on reducing the time that they get to live in that environment and really stopping them from being able to get to that critical infrastructure, getting to that crown jewel.
So you mentioned the proactive case there. Like, let's talk about that for a second. What does that actually look like? Does that mean just doing, you know, regularly pulling back telemetry? And then, you know, after we've spoken about that, I mean, this is sort of the client behavior, for want of a better metaphor, but then we can talk about actually what it is that you're doing on the back end, which is making this useful for sort of threat hunting. But what is that, what is a proactive use of a technology like this actually look like?
To follow up with Mike, you know, it really comes down to what's the client's business, what do they care about, what do they want to protect? I mean, because again, we're not telling people not to use endpoint solutions. You know, those things serve a purpose. There's a reason to have them, and they're necessary. So there's parts of the network where that is going to be sufficient because they've done some kind of risk measure, and you know, so to protect the edge of my yard, I'm okay with a fence, but to protect the inside of my house, I'm going to want different technology. Or to protect where my kids sleep at night, I might want different technology, right? So there's kind of that approach. So we work with the client, we team with them, and we identify those critical places. Now, what it looks like on the proactive side is our platform is not simply just gathering data that other tools could gather. There is some proprietary technology that allows us to over the wire look into running memory, look for a series of things that we know could indicate adversary presence. Doesn't mean it does, but it's highly likely. And so based on those numbers of indicators that our platform can look at, again, one-to-one or one-to-many, we can then take follow-on steps. Now, depending on the conop with the customer, what kind of risk base they're at, are they doing it on-prem? Are we doing it for them?
So you're talking about putting this stuff in memory and leaving it there as like an ongoing thing in the case of proactive defense?
No. So in that case, what we're doing is there's going to be periods of time where we are doing that, but we're not leaving it there forever, right? Because again, we don't want the adversary to catch our presence, figure out what we're doing, and then know how to maneuver around it, right? So we operate under these windows of time.
So it's like a scheduled push, right?
Scheduled is a little bit, that's a little strong because it might be random, right? You know what I'm saying? So we try not to create patterns.
Yeah.
Kind of things, right? So again, it's...
Yeah, I mean, if the attacker knows that every 3 p.m., you know, the threat hunt software winds up in memory, it's probably a good time to, you know, just disappear for an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
And then remember, we're not just relying on what we're doing. We're also leveraging all that other technology that's deployed to help drive that, right? So if there is something that happens in the network that we would see it based on our background experience that might trigger something for us based on a different playbook, we might tell our operator or you know, tell the customer's operator, hey, in that case, you might want to go do these 10 things, or these 5 things, or whatever it is, right? And then they can then take, you know, step 2, step 3, step 4. And then if there is a breach or if an adversary's trying to breach the network based on what they're seeing, then the platform also allows us to take appropriate action, right? So we can do things like stop things that are running in the network. We can shut things down, those kind of things. Again, in partnership with the customer, understanding what their business context and what they care about, because we obviously don't want to put them at risk by shutting down a bunch of point of sale systems, you know, for example.
Okay, so we've spoken about like how this code is deployed to various endpoints on the network and what it's supposed to do. Now, of course, this thing's only going to be as effective as what you can do with the information that it extracts. So what's the general approach here? You're pulling back this telemetry. What are you looking for?
Yeah, so absolutely.
Well, first of all, before, what are you looking for? What are you actually pulling back? You mentioned that you can look for various things in memory. I'm guessing you're pulling system logs, things like that as well.
Yeah, so the platform's extensible, right? You can really, there's a series of payloads that come with it out of the box, but it's customizable. So if you had your, let's say you mentioned Mandiant.
By the way, I love it that in your shop as a threat hunting company, you actually call your modules payloads. And in discussions with one of your other staff members, that may have made me laugh. But go on.
Well, it really is a payload, right? It's using that same type of approach. And so the way we designed it is we have our proprietary payloads that come with it, but it's also customizable. So you had mentioned Mandiant earlier. In the case of Mandiant, they've got some really good forensics capabilities, right? So organizations have bought those. So the way we designed it is let's just go and incorporate those in there if they have them so that they can continue utilizing those environments. And so what I'm getting at there is really the collection or the payload that gets delivered can be anything. But in kind of a standard operation, I guess, if I was using our operators, what they'll do is they'll identify, let's stick with Windows, just make it simple. They'll identify a Windows host, let's say, that is maybe kind of critical infrastructure. Maybe it's a point of sale device or a couple point of sale devices. What they'll do is they'll go and they'll remotely connect to that environment. When they remotely connect, that's where they'll deploy what you were calling an agent. Really, it's a stager. So think of something like the concept of Meterpreter. We have a modular design where we deploy it, gives us an interactive connection. And at that point, they can continuously pull back data sets. And so in the case of that environment, as part of the initial collection, what they may end up pulling back is, I want to look at all of the running processes. I want to look at the signing certs of all those processes. I want to pull the hash of all the processes that are running, right? I want to collect that. I want to take a look at all dynamic link libraries that are loaded. I want to see, was there any loaded after the process was executed, like a DLL inject or something like that. I want to take a look at the NetStack connections. I want to take a look at the drivers. I want to take a look at really everything that you would end up pulling potentially as part of an incident response investigation. Now, when that data all comes back, it all goes back into a backend database, and then we're doing a known versus unknown kind of comparison. And so I know you're going to have a question about how that works, and I'll fill that in here in a second. But essentially, as we're going through, we'll do the cross correlation. So if code was inserted directly into memory, let's say a DLL inject took place, once we identify that DLL inject, then at that point through that component, my team can go back and say, okay, I want to dump the proc mem of that specific process, and I want to see what that DLL was, or I want to read what has been loaded, the pages that have been loaded, and see what's inside of those. And then effectively, to John's point, then if they identify some specific new indicator or new signature, right? And when I say signature, I'm saying something new that they've identified, never been seen, but previously would be an unknown, they then can open that up to the remainder of the enterprise and effectively start grepping through memory on other machines in that operating environment. And so from there, they then formulate the response of what ends up taking place.
So, now, I mean, look, it sounds a little bit like what you've done here is figured out how to deploy something like, I mean, Google's got, you know, GER, right? Google Rapid Response. Sounds like what you've got is something similar to that, only you can deploy it without, you know, having to run an agent because GER is something that you need to install, right? Like this is just, this enables you to push out onto boxes without having to pre-install it.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives massive amounts of scalability because of the design. And then it's also designed to be very stealthy in nature. So every time we push out, we're basically doing a direct memory inject of whatever module we want to load. And then we're cleaning that up after the fact. And so to John's point earlier, really what we're trying to do is we're trying to come in and be very stealthy like an adversary would and do the investigation and then have the ability to be able to get in the cyber knife fight if we identify them there.
A cyber knife fight. I like that. But it's, yeah. So I guess that's one way you could put it. You could say it's sort of like GER, but it's stealthier and it's deployed more like an agentless vuln scanning agent. I mean, I'm heaping metaphor on metaphor here, but I mean, does that kind of fit?
Yeah. So the only one I struggle with is vuln scanning, right? Because I mean,
I'm not talking about them using it as an actual vuln scanner. I'm just talking about the deployment method. That's it.
Yes. It would be similar in nature.
Yeah. No, I know you're not doing vuln scanning. It's okay. So let's talk about what actually happens once you've collected all of this information, right? Because what you've spoken about sounds like a lot of the data that you're pulling back, I mean, it's going to require some form of manual analysis. And, you know, it's 2018. Everyone's obsessed with automation. They want machine learning to do everything for them so that they don't have to sit in front of consoles, actually thinking about stuff. You know, where have you found your balance between automation and sort of reliance on manual expertise? Where do you set that line? Because that's a big challenge for vendors in all sorts of sub niches of security, everything from, you know, detection to EDR to malware classification to whatever. Like, yeah, where do you set it?
Yeah, so absolutely. So I'll talk about the platform first, and then I'll kind of step back, and I think John will probably jump in on this one too. But everything I talked about there, where I was walking through kind of a manual process, in Orion version 2.0, everything that you do is a RESTful API, right? And so essentially, it allows for automation of activity. And so what I'm getting at there is I can take threat intel feeds and I can directly feed those into the platform in real time as an operator's hunting. And so if there is a malicious binary that was sitting on machine X, when they hunt on that box, it can pop up red and show them that that's malicious so that they can actively go and engage. Similarly, what we've been able to do with the platform, because everything is a RESTful API, is we've been able to use basically network traffic capabilities, right, and deploy malware inside of environment as kind of a proof of concept with a signature in that network traffic and pick your network traffic capability. As it called back out of the environment, it would trigger a signature, and then we can use our orchestration software essentially at that point to launch an auto collection, an auto response. In the case of what we've done as part of the proof of concepts and what we have deployed inside of our adversary pursuit center is we'll reach out, we'll pull that data, we'll collect forensic residue remotely over the wire off of those hosts. We will pull back the binary, shove it through basically a sandbox, and then we can also kill the connection if it was indeed malicious. And so through that entire thing from end to end has been automated, and we've been able to do it in essentially near real time with the platform and with other products that are deployed in there. Now, on the unknown components, right, where you don't have a signature, then you do have some of that manual labor. And really, at the end of the day, that's where I think some of our storyline is different, because you can't automate everything. Right. And your sophisticated adversaries will use polymorphic code or metamorphic code base as they come in with very similar techniques. And so we'll build out essentially playbooks or IOCs that can be wrapped into the platform to constantly go through and learn. So you're constantly adjusting kind of that payload construct. And as we identify something with the way the data is in there, there's essentially a shopping cart on the back end for analytics so that you can start to cross correlate network traffic with processes or things of that nature.
And then the other cool part is, because of the way Mike and the dev team built version 2 of the platform using those APIs, we don't really need to be wed or married to a specific analytic capability. So, you know, you can name your behavior analytic capability your machine learning capability, your orchestration capability, whatever the case may be. And we can integrate those things with this platform or the other way. And so you don't need an operator for everything. As Mike was saying, you can have, in the case of this playbook, execute these 10 tasks, gather the data, do the analytic, and then you can trigger, you know, follow-on events, or you could, you know, elevate to the next tier of operator. Maybe tier one is automated and tier two is manual, those kind of things. So customers can be very flexible with how they scale the capability. It allows us to do the same things for our customer because we have a couple different ways that we deploy this thing, whether it's fully on-prem, fully operated by our people out of our op center 24/7, or some kind of hybrid in the middle, right? So by building it this way, we're not kind of stuck to one solution. We do the same thing with EDRs. You know, there's a lot of great EDR products out there. So we built it in a way where if we have customers that are using product X as their EDR or as their AV product or whatever it is, we can integrate with that. If another customer is using a different capability to do the same thing, and maybe they have an asset management capability, we can integrate that as well, right? So we built it under the mindset of being able to walk into a customer and saying, hey, look, so you spent $5, $10, $20 million on all this technology. We're not telling you to get rid of it. We're going to help you get a return on investment that you're not getting today, because look at all of your peers and competitors out there that are using the same technology, and it's only a matter of time before they're on the front page with an adversary living in their network for 6+ months, right? So that's how we go into the activity.
So it's a seatbelt for your seatbelt. Jokes. I want to ask though, a fair chunk of your customer base is federal government in the United States. Like, what sort of percentage of your client base is, or percentage of your revenue actually comes from federal government?
I would say right now, coming out of the event last summer, we're probably more 60-40 right now, government to commercial. Well, I mean, for the commercial side, you know, we have customers that span all the verticals, right? So we have customers in the finance space, we have customers in the critical infrastructure space, we have customers in the retail space, we have international customers as well as U.S. domestic customers. We have everything from focused on this Hunt platform, as well as we also provide services to customers that just aren't happy with their current, you know, maybe it's their current MDR provider they're just not happy with, so they ask us to take over that contract, right? Because, you know, we're finding a lot of people are hearing the buzzword of Hunt or threat hunting, and when they talk to us, they realize that they're not really getting what they think they're getting from their MDR or maybe their MSS solution. So they're starting to realize, wait a minute, I can get that same MSS solution or MDR solution as well as have Hunt if I'm giving it to you guys to do. So we're making a lot of progress there. We have a good breadth of customer base, good mix of customer base.
I'd imagine though that most companies that are going to want to, you know, do this are going to be your larger type of, you know, they're going to have larger InfoSec teams. I can't imagine something like this being deployed to a company that might have a security team of 3 people.
Yeah. So if you don't mind, John. What I'd say to that is you're spot on. So with the product, right, there's different deployment models here. And so with the product component, you're going to have governments, financial institutions, you know, like your Fortune 100 are pretty much going to have those larger InfoSec teams that you're talking about. And they would be more likely to buy the product, put it on-prem, and then Route 9B comes in, trains them and on the methodology, and then, you know, they can reach back for SME support. For the organizations with, you know, 3 folks that are doing security, in that model, that's where we have our adversary pursuit center here in Colorado Springs. It's 24/7 ops facility, and it's a security as a service. So Hunt as a service, where we can use the product, the data can either be on-prem for them, or it could be back in our adversary pursuit center. And then because of the agentless approach, all that I really need is a VPN tunnel into their environment, and we're able to start hunting at scale.
And that also applies for, you know, maybe companies that are larger companies, but have a heavy cloud-based model for, you know, where their data is, how they're issuing resources. We also have customers in that space.
Yeah. And you're a smaller company, right? Like, what's your total full-time headcount?
We are just now going over 100.
Just going over 100, right? So So I'd imagine you're really tuning the software so that people working for you aren't going down rabbit holes every 10 minutes when it comes to weird things happening on customer sites. Is that a big part of what you're doing on the professional services side? Is just getting it, improving the quality of the signaling so that you're not having to do full threat hunt and analysis across an entire desktop fleet every day.
Yeah, you're spot on, Patrick. I mean, if you look at every breach, the one thing no one said is that they didn't have enough data, right? And so the data is there, the products are there, it's being able to decipher them. And so the team basically does exactly as you said. They tune it. We're using expert systems on the back end when we're doing our analytics. We're using a good portion of security products like you'd find anywhere else as well. And then we're streamlining those. And what we do is we focus on basically those TTPs. So we try not to get caught in the noise of taking, 30 different threat intel feeds and then trying to find that hash. What we do is really fine-tune those kind of components down to really what would the motive be of the adversary going after those specific clients. And then this way we're kind of focused on that.
All right, Michael Morris, John Harbaugh, thank you very much for joining us on Soapbox to walk us through what it is that you do.
Thank you, Patrick.
Yeah, thank you, Patrick. We appreciate your time.
That was John Harbaugh and Mike Morris of Route 9B there. Big thanks to them for that. There is a link through to some product information in the post for this podcast. Do go check them out if you're interested. And until next week, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.